This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by ChasingArtwork.com, with new artwork and books updated regularly. Go to ChasingArtwork.com to see more.
Perfect. You're getting real good at this.
Yeah, there we go.
Attention, citizens. It's time for Super Pulp Science.
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I am here with Justin Curry, known the world over as Chasing Artwork, my studio mate here in The Exchange in downtown Winnipeg. We're also joined today by our producer, Dan Vadabon-Kerr, the man twiddling the knobs. How are you doing today,
Dan? Twiddling any knobs. I'm just hovering over the
hovering
knobs.
Hovering over a potential knob.
No, I'm not going to touch it. It's okay. Perfect. Don't touch it.
All right.
Justin and I are two writers and illustrators who make our living slinging books, art, and creative stuff, and we're going to talk to you about how we do that, why we do that, when we do that. But before we do that, I want to say something. When I came into the studio, the table that currently has our podcast set up on was spread out with all of Justin's new art book proofs. Is this an exclusive? Do we know? Have I broken silence?
I see it right there.
Yeah, kind of.
Should I not have mentioned this?
No.
Thank you. So, now he's letting me look at it. So I guess we're allowed to.
So for people who don't know how printing works, you get a crappy version of your book sent to you by the printer, which is the content.
Printed on a different printer than they print your book on. So it's, they call it a proof, but really it's not going to look like what your actual book is going to look like. So that always kind of seemed a bit, I don't know, I wish that had been explained to me, like even as somebody who's been trained as a like graphic designer and knows about print, like that seemed almost underhanded.
Yeah,
but is it because it's cheaper to print it on this or something?
But it's also, it's a content proof, right? So what you're actually checking there is not the artwork, but are all the pages where they're supposed to be in the order?
Yeah. And so my very first big print project was Cassie and Tonk. And it was 2,500 books were printed. And when the digital proof arrived, I thought that this was kind of, you were signing off on this is what your book is going to look like. My very first book, Cassie and Tonk, arrived. The digital proof arrived, which means they print the book on a digital press. And so it looked really good. I was happy with everything. Everything was where it needed to be. And then when it went to offset, the way I had mixed my blacks was not quite correct. So these pieces in the book that were supposed to be one flat black, you could actually pick out distinct little shapes in them, because when it goes to an offset press, which is CMYK plates, it mixes differently. So you could see all these shapes in my blacks, whereas on the proof, you couldn't see them at all. So I'd signed off on a proof where everything looked perfect, and when the actual book arrived, I could see these little imperfections that weren't in the proof, and this was kind of upsetting.
Yes.
But now I understand, but this was not explained to me, and I don't think, like most 90% of people probably don't realize that as well. And this was kind of a fluke problem, like not everybody's going to run into the problem like that, but it was a lesson learned.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. So if we talk about early books, when I was doing the Imagination Manifesto, same thing. I printed the first two volumes more or less without any problems, because the way I had done the color separations on it worked. Mm-hmm. I tried a slightly different technique, and without belaboring the point, it just meant that there was a certain bit more purple in the book overall. And when I got my content proof, I was used to them being a little bit lower resolution, a little bit murkier. Like if you look in there, you can see it's just printed on a lower quality paper, so the ink spreads a little bit.
Right.
And they had printed
just
like this. They give you a set of signatures.
It's too bad we can't show this to the podcast.
Yeah, no, but this is okay even in audio. You get a set of signatures that is printed the right way on the right paper, but it's only a sample. So you get a sample of here's how it'll look. Like this, and then here's how it'll look like this. At least that's how I got it.
And that it is a cost-saving measure, because they don't want to print the whole thing.
To set up an offset press, if there's a mistake on it, it's a waste, right? It's like thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
It's an entire building of a printer. This thing is massive. And so they can't just run a test on it.
So what happened is they picked some random pages and sent them to me, which I signed off on. Everything was great. But again, this was this speaks to a little bit of inexperience. I had changed a process on some of the page work, and those purple pages that they chose random pages to print from just turned out none of them were in that sample. So when the book came out and was printed and I got thousands of copies delivered, I opened it up, I realized the color was wrong through the whole book. And it was one of those things where the casual observer who doesn't know what I'm trying to do can't tell the difference. It doesn't look like
that
an
error. That was going to be my first question. Is this something that anybody would notice but
no,
you?
No, just how I wanted the book to look and how it looked was different. And it was one of those moments where I kind of had to say to myself, because when I raised the question, I said, this don't look right. Let's look at these proofs and let's see that there's an error and I'm very unhappy and all the rest. The printer and my book rep in particular was quick to say, we'll fix it. We'll figure out a way to do it. And they said, if you return the whole shipment, we can print them again. What I did with that printer was ask for a tangible apology on my bill, is how I worded it. Like, prove to me that it's a mistake. Save us all from having to reprint a new book. Give me a, you know, like, it'll cost you money to pulp it and do it. Give me a rebate, essentially, on my thing for the mistake. And since I'll probably be the only one that can tell the difference, we'll just leave it at that. But to this day, when I open that book, I'm disappointed.
Do you think you should have asked for store credit since you print with those guys so often?
In retrospect, if I had known what I know now, that I would just keep going back to that well, then yeah, that would have been the right thing. But it was a big experiment at the time of whether or not self-publishing was a route that could be financially feasible. And by book three, I was just figuring out that it sort of was. But I didn't know then.
Takes
what
a while
I know
to figure
now.
That out.
It takes a while to figure that out.
And
know?
That first book, I think it's so, like, everybody wants to make a book, right? And a lot of people have that dream of making that kid's book, making that comic, and you make the one book, and it's so hard for one book to be a runaway success that, like, almost never happens, especially in self-publishing. But once you have two or three or four books, then you actually start to see, you know, you can start to make a living off that, I think. But it's so hard to just make one and done and expect to make it in this business.
Yeah, nothing, you know, we've said it before, nothing sells your new book like your last book, or nothing sells your last book. You'll have to edit this. Nothing sells your last book, your last book like your new book. Mm-hmm. And so if your first book is someone finding you, needing to take a chance, you know, people don't take chances. Can I also share, while we're on this tangent, some news from the front lines of Big Five Publishing?
Big Five, you mean like Scholastic and...
Yeah, like the bigger...
What are the Big Five?
So the Big Five publishers are Penguin, Random House, Hatchet Book Group, HarperCollins, Simon & Schuster, and Macmillan.
Hatchet,
yeah. So, and each of these Big Five publishers have umbrellas and imprints and all kind, like, you can't throw a dollar in a bookstore without hitting a book from the Big Five, basically. COVID has affected book buying in a very specific way. Do you guys want to hazard a guess?
I mean, it's
not like pricing or where this isn't profits related. This is just like what percentage of what
like
kinds
a lot
of books?
More people bought books.
Yeah,
during,
people are reading more during the pandemic.
What are they reading?
Mysteries.
They're reading stuff that they know.
Romance.
Yes.
They're not picking up new titles. They're picking up.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know,
so,
those old Stephen Kings that they haven't read yet, and those old. Yeah.
So typically speaking, you'll have 70% of your revenue in a bookstore comes from new titles coming in that are being pushed by the publishers, and 30% is backlist. That's almost completely flipped during the pandemic.
Because people can't go in and browse anymore. They're just looking up that book that they heard about or had wanted to read.
So this has been really hard for new authors, really hard for debut authors, really hard for people who, you know, are used to the Christmas season being where their book gets discovered. People are like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to get the new fill in the blank that I know about, right? That comfort
the new
reading.
GMB Kimmichuk.
I'm somebody now.
people.
If you have a bit of a backlist, that's where it's come in, you know? And some of my backlist titles, according to my royalty statements, did much better than my newer titles this past, you know, really 24 months. Hmm. And it's been a really interesting thing to think about. But also, when you're talking about your new art book here, this is a very specific, this ties more into the Imagination Manifesto, which we self-published and which we released ourselves by going to shows. Your art book is an exclusive thing that only people who know you, follow you, love you, want it. It doesn't go to bookstores. It goes direct through your own distribution channels. Why don't you tell us a little about how that works?
So this is art book number 4. So the other art books, they're all limited runs. My very first art book I only printed 500 of, and they're gone. Art book 2 and 3 still have some, and this is art book number 4. And before, I only sold them through my website and at comic conventions. I didn't put them in bookstores. I didn't do any kind of traditional publishing. There's not even like a barcode on this book. And that was because I wanted to keep it a little bit exclusive. I wanted to... It's basically kind of a blog of, from the last art book until now, what I've done. All my new pieces, kind of what I've been up to.
Tons of process. That's
tutorials
what I like about it. Yeah.
And step-by-steps. All the little screenshots that I take of my work along the way, I put into the book. So the last 2 books have been around 100 pages. I think it was 75 and then 100. And this book is 160 pages. And so I was kind of... This was supposed to be printed late 2019 or late or early 2020. But then with the event, there was no reason to print it, right? I didn't have any way to get it out there. So finally, I'm printing it now, and that's for a couple different reasons. One was I have 2 Kickstarters coming up. One is going to be a print-based Kickstarter, and the other is going to be my new graphic novel. And
the third one, actually, which we can only hint at, you'll also be able to put it into.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
So this is something I really wanted for my last Kickstarter that I didn't have. So I wanted it. I wanted for that, and then also it was just becoming too big. At what point, like 160 pages is a pretty robust book, and
right. So and I'll point out to the listener, which Dan is seeing as he goes through it. This is a time capsule as much as it is an art book. This is like a journal of your experience and your growth as an artist, which is set in time. You know, I have lots of art. We have, I don't know, a couple hundred art books on the shelf over there that are often retrospectives of a whole career. And so it's picking and choosing and taking sort of the choice pieces that people might know. But this is literally not just what you made, but how you made it and why you made it during that calendar year. Two calendar years went by, right?
And it's also got photos from conventions here, people who have taken your art and tattooed it on themselves, or this girl made a dress.
She made a full Gundam
dress. Gundam dress. Yeah. It's so cool. And there's a cosplay as well, so you're showing, like, fan interactions and that kind of stuff, which is really cool. So it is really just a diary of your life.
And it's a fun project to have. Like, if anybody's thinking about making... an art book and you make art full time, I really recommend it. And it's also like a nice therapeutic side project to have on the back burner all the time. Every time I finished a project, the last step would be dumping it into that art book folder and plopping it into the InDesign and then kind of forgetting about it. And like, so I was just kind of constantly plopping things onto pages until that last month leading up to print. And then I went in and, you know, arranged everything correctly and made it look, you know, wrote my little articles and stuff.
So just to sum up your automatopoeia, it's plop, 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 print?
Yes.
Yes, okay, plop, just plop. For those of you playing the home game here. What is neat about that as a concept, and I think useful to anyone else who is making a regular amount of art and doesn't know what to do with it, maybe making a bunch of fan art and doesn't know how to promote it, maybe making a bunch of projects that aren't all finished, but you want to be able to show off the pieces that go into it because you might want to be able to attract new clients by showing a skill set that you haven't got the finished product to show off yet.
Yeah, it's a great portfolio piece. I've definitely dropped these off at like some big name tables at conventions as like, here's what I can do. It's, you know, better looking than... like most, it's a printed book, right? It's not only all my work, but then it's in a really appealing package. So I think I've definitely gotten some jobs and some opportunities out of having an art book. I even convinced you to make one that 1 year.
You did, yeah. And then, let's see, we took it on the road 1 year, and then COVID happened, and now it's so stale that in my mind, it's actually kind of not of use to me, is what I think of it as. But the funny thing is I had a friend over at the studio the other day. He was helping me move some things, and he's like, wait, you have an art book? And I was like, yeah. He's like, what? I've never seen any of this stuff. So my divorce of that work, I have to remember, is not indicative of people's relationship with the work. And I have to get out of my head that it's old work and instead think of it for what these are, really, time capsules, right? And some people are interested in those periods of time and those moments. And so, yeah, it's absolutely... a worthwhile project, but in my heart of hearts, I was like, well, I missed the window on that, right? To discuss.
Well, do you think you missed the window just the when it was printed? It was kind of at the end of a convention season, and by the time it was time to start selling it again, you'd done a bunch of new stuff, so it felt stale?
Yes, that.
Yeah.
And then also, just as we were ramping up to move it again, and I'd sort of like fallen in love. I convinced myself, okay, yeah, no, it's fine. It's good. And I made a display for it and the whole thing. And
yeah,
it was working.
We printed it in October because I printed my book the same time. We got a deal on printing.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, by hook or by crook, a bunch of things just didn't quite work out. And now here we are 3 years later.
And especially with books, you have to be so careful with the weight. So if you're not in love with that book, you're going to bring the other ones instead of that.
Your enthusiasm, like when you're traveling, your enthusiasm sells the book. And so I didn't want to bring a, you know, the child you're disappointed in.
Oh my God. So,
you've only done the one art book?
I only have the one art book. Because the way I think of it is I finish, don't take this as casting shade there, Justin, but I finish more books than Justin. So in my mind, my books are the art book.
We should have some big tally up because this is book number 11 for me.
Yeah. Oh, you're way behind. I'm like 14 ahead of you. Catch up, buddy. Catch up. I don't even know. I'm flexing, but it might be close.
No, I think what Justin has done by releasing four art books and continuing to release art books every year or every other year, in this case, is that he's created a series now. And it's,
absolutely.
And it's, what do people like to do a series?
Well, this is
they
what
like
we're talking about.
Them, right? So this is, makes it more incentive. Everybody who's purchased the first three books will likely buy this one as well.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Not only that, is if you bought the first three, I think if you're following people's... if you're into an artist's career, you know, like, for example, I've been getting into collecting the early works of Wally Wood, which they're finally reprinting as ink line collections. If you're into that early stage of work, that's what you're hunting for, right? But then as you watch an artist develop, if you're interested in it, a number of things happen. You get inspired as you watch them grow. You see them tackle new techniques, and it reminds you that you should be tackling new techniques. It shows that even though things are successful or unsuccessful, they haven't given up. And all of those kinds of things sort of culminate into, if you're a creative person following the work of another person, we're finally at a time in history where you can actually see that progression. If you had all three of your, I mean, we call them art books, but they're really your creative journal, right, of your body of work. If you go to the first one and you see how you talk about laying out files and you look at how you do it now, you see the leap in technology. You see the leap in methodology. You see the leap in arranging compositions. You see the leap in clients. You see all of those things along the way. And I think it's really healthy for a person to realize that your body of work builds up slowly over time. Mm. When you arrive and you see someone, you hear like, oh, they worked on, you know, they did a piece for Stranger Things, or, oh, they did a thing for Star Wars or whatever. You imagine like, oh, how can I get from there to here? Or from here to there? Or what is that journey like? It's impossible for me to do it.
If you looked at their art book, you'd see the hundreds of little projects that led up to the big project.
That's right. And I think that that's a really important step. And when we talk about this change in how reading public has gone back to their comfortable favorites, it's because they know what to expect. And they know, they've tasted that. You know, it's like... it's a flavor that triggers a memory of a time when there wasn't as much to worry about, right? I think that's underneath what's going on in the buying habits right now.
I don't need any of this. I don't need this stuff. I don't need you. I don't need anything except this.
There's also a moment of looking at it and realizing what this art's like. You in particular, when I look at your body of work, if you look at your art books, when I watch people come to your table, they flip through it. Where they usually stop, and it'd be interesting to know if even you're aware of it. From my perspective, where people tend to stop is the same pages that Dan stopped at. The interactions around the work that you've documented. They're usually pausing, and their smiles ear to ear when they realize that their connection to the work matters to you enough to include it as part of your process. Right? And I don't think that should go too understated, that those parts that you put in to show, like, you support me, and that literally gives me the energy to keep making the work that then you're able to buy. Like, those parts where so much of the internet these days is, or for a good while, was about trying to show how your life is perfect, that there are no setbacks, that nothing, and you don't need anyone, and you're sort of this unassailable apex of your career. That's not what you show. You show that without those people, you got nothing. So thanks. And here's the thing I made, not for bookstores, not for anyone else, but just for the people that have followed me all along the way.
It's true.
Right? So I think that's really good. Whereas I think that on my own collection, I missed that step. So that's another thing. When I look at it and I say, I feel like there's a piece missing, that's the piece that I realized too late I should have included more of.
But this is one of those perfect things, like when you have a piece that you're really proud of but didn't land, and you have a bunch of those prints sitting around, that becomes a great little bonus for some other project. So this, to me, like if I had a book that I didn't really push or wasn't moving, it immediately goes into that add-on category of, like, whatever. Absolutely. I'm doing next, for like a really reduced rate, you can get that art book and my new book
as absolutely. A package. Well, and just talking about the logistics of that, the last show, the last real show where I had where I pushed my Join the Fight art book here was, I can't even remember what the show was, but what I did was I said, I put the book front and center, and I actually said that it was not available for purchase. You only got it if you bought three books.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right?
Perfect.
So what it did is it incentivized, and then I had a little sign that said, if you've already bought three books and you can prove it, it's only $10.
Oh, okay.
And so people would go, they came on the Friday of that show, then came back with pictures of the books in their house, like with them holding the books or whatever. And then I was like, oh, well, you've been a longtime supporter, so I'll give it to you for the print cost just as a way of saying thank you. And that actually it helped to replace in my heart the part I felt was missing from the book, which was like thanking the people who supported the work in the first place. And so I was sort of gearing up to do that again for 2019, and then
The event
occurred. So I feel like that's likely the tack I will take. I really love that piece. I'm really keen on the cover.
I really like the back last page.
Oh, yes. It's an advertising Super Bowl Science podcast. Yeah.
I got that in this book as well.
Okay, good.
So the other thing I'm excited about, and I've never really done before.
Oh, yeah.
So this art book, so usually when I do a book, as soon as it's kind of on its way to print, I'm advertising for it and I'm pushing it. I'm getting people excited. I have events lined up. It's always kind of a rushed, crazy time when the book is getting printed. And then as soon as it arrives, it's scramble, go, 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 because you've got to ship them and do events and blah, blah, blah. But with art book number 4, I'm kind of keeping it under the radar until all the books arrive. There's only 1,000, so I'm going to sit and hand number them and take some time sketching in them and do a photo shoot with the actual physical book.
Just you in a bathtub full of books?
Yes, me in a bathtub full of books. And really take my time with kind of the launch of it. And every other book, that launch has been kind of just a crazy schedule. So it's kind of nice not to have that rush coming. The books are going to arrive, and I'm going to take my time setting everything up for its launch.
Yeah, what a cool...
So it's like a delayed launch. It's like what a normal big publisher does, right? They have the inventory, and then they start doing stuff. With us, we always start that train going before the book even gets here.
Yeah, traditional publishing is slow, but effective as a result, because that juggernaut's pace and size, right, is hard to ignore. When it finally does arrive, it usually stands out. Whereas we're kind of, what I like about self-publishing with short runs like this, you know, runs of around, you know, anywhere between 500 to 2,000, I consider a short run. They're nimble. So even though, and I should say this too, the financial burden of a short run of books is such that it's okay if I feel disappointed in that project because it's already paid for itself.
Yeah.
So like the last half of the print run, which I was sort of like, oh, I'm not sure what to do with it. I'm not totally in love with it. It wasn't this huge monkey on my back that was like, oh, ha, 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 this, like, you have all this debt or whatever. We just, we printed in such a way that you have to sell a certain percentage, usually about 25% of your total copies, to pay for the whole run. So that when you do that initial push, it kind of means that your stock is now essentially profit. So it's not a question of like, oh, I have to push this book because if I don't, I'm desperate to make money on it. I don't want to mischaracterize the project and like my emotions with it versus the business hat.
It's been a financial success.
Yeah. When we put the business hat on, we said we're only going to print a certain number of copies. We're going to make them exclusive. We're going to do all that stuff. We're going to push it at the shows. So after a couple of shows, when it got into the black, I started asking myself, like, am I pushing the wrong part of it? And then I realized sort of my missing piece. It's interesting. I didn't think we'd talk about this today. But my missing piece of this art book was that lack of fan connection and how I kind of had to figure out how then to square that circle with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that said, I was really excited when I saw your book on the table because I love that day when the FedEx package comes and you tear it. And all the guts of your new project spill out almost together, like almost put together, which is not unlike how your own artwork is, right? You have all these different pieces that are just a little nudge here and a nudge there, and suddenly it clicks together into a robot, right? I just think that that was a kind of a special moment today just before we set up the podcast, so I didn't want it to go unmentioned.
It's also nice... Like almost every time I go through this proofing process, I'm feeling a little rushed because I want to get the book approved into print so we can have it by X date, because I've already told the entire world that by X date it's going to be here and I can start shipping it out. Whereas with this one, I can kind of take my time with all the adjustments that they've suggested and lined out, and I can wait for that mail to arrive. Like usually... We're approving the book online before the proof even arrives in the studio. Even though it's only like 2-3 days, we're rushing to get that approval check so it can go to print so we can have the book as soon as possible. So it's really nice having this, like, not rushing this last step of a book process.
Typically, fans of the film Trains, Planes, and Automobiles, you want to imagine Justin and I running around, but instead of a big case of shower curtain rings, it's basically print-proof files. So we're running for a plane while we're also approving a file, while we then have to arrange to pay for it while we're on the road, while we then, you know, like... Yeah.
Rust and Water, we had FedEx to Edmonton while we were staying at an Airbnb. So we had to get the Airbnb address to the printer so they could send the proof, so they could overnight it.
Yeah, but then as I recall, of course, you can't just, the way that that condo was, you couldn't just deliver things without the person who owned the condo approving it, so we had to let them know that we had this mail coming, and they were a little dubious that we were having things shipped to their home.
Yeah, because you don't usually do that when you're renting an Airbnb.
That's weird.
So, you know, it's
which
kind
one of
a,
you is John Candy is my question. I've been wanting to ask that since you made the reference.
I think we switch that role, depending on what city we're in.
Good. I don't know. You're rarely grumpy. I can't. Sorry, what's the other actor's name?
Steve Martin.
Steve Martin.
He's the straight man. John Candy is the...
I don't think either of us are Steve Martin that often.
Not that often, no. We switch...
We're basically two John Candies.
Oh no.
Two John Candy selling our shower curtain rings across.
Just bumbling through the tour.
What does he call it? The Northern Midwest, which is like just nonsense.
What's the matter with these cans? Die, milkface! These cans are defective. They're springing leaks.
It's New York Comic Con this week.
I know.
Oh yeah, I saw someone posting about that. Yeah.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, FOMO, fear of missing out, is a thing if you make books at all in the comic book space. San Diego Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, when they happen, everyone's announcing their new projects. All the secret deals are finally come to fruition. Everyone who had news to share starts sharing it. So when you're not present at the show, which we usually are at those shows, when you're not, the sphere around you that starts to fill with all this news and stuff really does create some tension on the heartstrings. How are you with it this year?
So my first thought was when I saw people posting that they're going to the New York Comic Con was I think about how kind of like stressed out and crazy I get beforehand. So I'm almost arriving at New York under the weather because I've been like not sleeping correctly and just kind of like stressing myself out about like just all the logistics and everything. So I arrive already not feeling that well in New York. And then after interacting with how many thousands of people, usually feel kind of under the weather for the next couple days after a show that big. So that's compounded with the stuff that's already going on in the world just made me like, you know what? It's okay. I'm okay not going.
Yeah, you don't have FOMO.
And when I come back, it's going to be so much. That's actually kind of what I got out of Calgary was people just build up that excitement to see you. So I had a lot of people like New York customers asking me if I was going to be there. So I've been replying all week that I won't be attending this year. And I know that when I do go back, I'm going to see that excitement. I'm going to get those rewards when I do go back. Not
a reward for patience.
Yeah.
Now there was no San Diego this year, so this is the first big major con.
Yeah. They're doing something.
They did an online thing. San Diego did an online thing.
No,
I don't know what it was.
I think they're doing something in November, December. Oh, but again, nobody seems super thrilled about it. It's not the San Diego.
Yeah.
Nor is this the New York Comic Con. But it's pretty. I will say that today, when I was looking through the news of the announcements and that same electricity that I normally feel, I didn't feel it at all. Like, I didn't. It was actually a surprise. I was like, oh, yeah, that would be this weekend. Wow, this is what we normally do. But I was not caught up in the fervor of it. And I had a moment where I sat this morning. I often get up early, and then I'll sort of make notes about, like, what I need to do or what I'm thinking about. But if an idea occurs to me, I just kind of pontificate it. I'll scratch out little dumb bubbles or whatever of whatever I'm thinking. I'm just kind of make a framework for it. And so what I thought about today as I was doing this, I'm drinking my morning coffee, and I'm thinking about why aren't I excited about New York Comic Con? It's not the con itself. I love visiting the city of New York is quite thrilling. But I just realized that I personally am in a much different place with what I thought it represented versus recognizing what it actually represents. And to me, what the show actually represents is this deadline feeling that you're talking about, where all these people have worked so hard. They've made their thing, and they're racing to the finish line. And the thrill I actually get from New York Comic Con, aside from, you know, it's a good show, it's financially rewarding, it's all of these other things, but the actual thrill is seeing everyone cross that finish line, right? And they're all there, basically crossing it at the same time. Everybody wins. They're all there.
Everybody ties.
The little jalopies, the little booths that are like the little booth that could. It's the first time they've ever printed things, and it's a little off cut, and they've hand bounded, and it's not quite right. They're right there beside, you know, your biggest Hollywood guest, you know, in the same building, and everyone has raced to that finish line, and they're all sitting there for a second going, and that's the moment I love, where everyone arrived.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff happens, bad stuff happens, who knows, but it's that anticipation of the race.
For us too, it's the last big show of the year. It's mm-hmm. almost it's like our Olympics. From March until October, we are trying out new things at our booth, trying out new artwork, and then middle of October is that last big hurrah. That's yeah. like the biggest show for me, bigger than San Diego for me. And you know, like you kind of this is where everything you've learned for the year culminates, and after it's done, we have one local show left after that. So that's kind of the cap on our year.
Yeah, the international traveling part is done. And yeah. so maybe it's because it's been 2 years where I haven't got on a plane that I just don't feel I'm thinking about the other parts of it. You know, I love traveling. I love other people get stressed out about traveling. I don't at all. Let's just go. There's also a part, if I go back to the Imagination Manifesto years, if I think of it, since that's on our minds, or on at least mine now, thanks to you guys, I always saw shows as the next chance to find the unknown thing. Every book I've ever done, every project I've ever done has been as a result of visiting a show of some sort, meeting somebody at that show, and then following that thread to some inevitable conclusion. And for a while, I believed that was the only way to do it the way I knew how. And having 2 years where I had to prove to myself, oh, I know how to do that lots of ways, meant that now I can't wait to get back to shows, but for very different reasons that I was excited to do them before. And I'm hoping if you're listening to this episode in the future and you've seen me at a show, I was way more relaxed and a lot more like zen about the whole experience than I had been in the past. And hopefully I was more inviting to a person who's just starting out and more encouraging to that person, because, you know, that's where the juice is for me, is like seeing someone else starting that journey is just so full of potential. It's like your art book on the table. It's so full of potential. It's almost there. It's almost together. It's almost a thing, you know? I love that about early careers. We're mentoring somebody through the college right now.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing. When we're looking through their portfolio, you just see all this potential energy. And, you know, one of the things I appreciated the most doing that, and we'll leave them unnamed because we didn't tell them we were going to talk about their work or anything on the podcast. But looking at what was clear to me was this person's love that came through in their illustration, which objects, which things they liked to render and why it was there, it was clear in their portfolio, and other things that were assignments. And you could imagine an entire career trajectory out of the parts they loved. Mm-hmm. It just came so easily. You could just imagine all the different work that could come out of this process and all the places where it was clearly just what was assigned. There was no room to imagine. There was nothing to stir me up and be like, oh, yeah, definitely do more of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those parts where if you tell them, it won't land. But instead we asked, what would you like to do more of? Right? And sure enough, there it is, those areas. How would you like to approach it in this way, a new level? They can envision their own level immediately. And rather than say to them, which maybe is what the mentorship program expects us to say, well, these are the industry standards. Instead, we said, great, how can we build a scaffold under you for that next step? Who cares about the industry standards? Let's get you good at something.
Sometimes don't you need to be forced to do those unfun projects, unfun things to really click into what you'd rather be doing?
Absolutely. Yeah. They're necessary. Don't get me wrong. The portfolio had assignments. They were all assignments. But there were ones that the student leaned into with their full heart and ones that they just handed in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you need to assign everything. You know, like for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, I have a background in education. I spent 10 years as a classroom teacher. And so I feel very strongly about the need for a diverse, broad spectrum of exposing students to lots of different ideas. But time is short. Life is short. Love is short. You should put that energy into the thing that you're going to get the most out of, right? And not just for the money's sake. You'll be good at it. And if you're good at it because you love it, you'll practice all the time. And if you're practicing all the time, you'll be better than everyone else who's competing against you. And so in the end, you'll be able to charge what you're worth because you actually honed your craft all the way along. This has been Super Pulp Science, where we've talked about how genre gets made. This is Gregory Kamichuk encouraging you to collect all that work into an art book and join the fight and make comics.